Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this rainy Wednesday morning. Jeffrey Simmons will join us in about 40 minutes or so. We talked to John Glennon from The Athletic. It's been an Athletic theme today on the show. We had Pierre LeBrun and now John Glennon. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and you?
Doing fantastic. Want to make of, let's just start with the kicking situation. Do you think in your gut that Ryan Succop has a chance of actually playing on Sunday?
Good question. You know, he's certainly been improving, but, you know, the fact that they didn't activate him yet makes me wonder just a little bit. I wouldn't be stunned if we wait another week here. You know, I know he's been able to practice. We still haven't seen a lot of him, so, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they wait one more week. We'll see a lot today, I imagine.
I'm pretty sure that was you. I was trying, like I said, I'm pretty sure it was you. But, in fact, I think somebody came on here and said, gave you kudos.
Maybe it was Teron.
Yeah, was it Teron that said, okay.
It was John.
So, Teron, I thought it was you all along, and then I think Teron confirmed it on Monday when he was in studio with us. But, you know, I mean, we've talked about it every week. I mean, just the questionable calls. And I think, one, it's a dangerous path when all of a sudden you start getting defensive about it every time. And then you start lashing out at the media for asking the questions. What has been your whole take on some of the decisions that we've seen out of Mike Vrabel this season?
You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20. But I think to our credit, you know, now that we have Twitter, you know, we can actually call out some of these decisions before the play occurs. And I think I've been on record on Twitter as saying, you know, I disagree with some of those decisions before the play happened as well. And, you know, as has often been said, and then Mike Vrabel has said this too, it's one thing to be aggressive, another to be reckless. And, you know, we look in particular at this game last weekend against Tampa Bay and, of course, the fake field goal call. And my point there is that I just don't see the rewards of that outweighing the risk. To me, you know, even if you get that first down right there, there's still over 3.5 minutes left in the game. Tampa Bay has two timeouts. There's the two-minute warning. So you haven't clinched the game by any stretch. You're probably going to be in the same situation, just a little bit better time-wise, you know, in the next series of downs. But on the other hand, you risk turning the ball over. You risk getting your tremendous punter, you know, virtually decapitated. And you're putting the ball in the hands, obviously, of a guy, again, with Kern, who's not used to carrying the ball and that more prone to turnover. So I just didn't think it was a good call in that instance. And Mike, you know, certainly started off as his press conference, you know, almost trying to jump on it and quell the questions right away. And the questions were not going to go away on that.
Do you think he's capable of change? I feel like he digs in and, you know, it's almost like he's just going to keep pushing back. Do you think I said on Monday, quite honestly, if this is, you know, this is their guy, and we know this is John Robinson's guy, this is who he's identified to take them the next step, that's fine. But I think Mike Vrabel desperately needs like a former coach or someone that can talk to him in these situations. I have no clue if Mike Vrabel would ever be open to something like that. I have no clue if he would listen to anybody. How would you answer that?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, he was asked about analytics the other day and you know, what stock the Titans put in with them. And at first he began talking about, you know, hey, analytics are good. You know, you like to have every option available to you. And it almost seemed by the end of the answer, though, he was kind of like, yeah, but, you know, it's a bunch of numbers you know, what's it really say when things go differently in a game than you expected them to? So there's still a lot of, you know, kind of the old school, I think, also in Mike Vrabel of, you know, we're not going to concern ourselves too much with that. But I do think, you know, I think the Titans are one of the teams that haven't invested a lot in analytics, and I think that will likely change, would be my guess, during this offseason. I think Mike Vrabel is a bright guy, but I just don't think some of those decisions have been good. And, you know, you have to think when you look at your track record, and when I say track record, I'm looking at fourth downs, for instance, this year. I think they're 1-for-8 on fourth downs, and you say, hey, you know, maybe I ought to play it cautious for a time or two instead of, you know, pushing the envelope each and every time.
John, I think it's a great point on analytics. You're either going to get on board now or if you're not already, it might be too late. At least you're playing catch up. I think every sport has had plenty of examples. Baseball might have been the first, but the other sports have fallen into line. Football might be the last because it might be the toughest because there's the most guys on the field to try to use analytics to your advantage. I never thought basketball could use analytics, but man, is that game run by analytics now. So to sit there and scoff at it, I think is, man, we've seen this 10, 15 years ago. Coaches do that, but they usually don't last if you're not using it as part of your tools. It's not; it shouldn't take over what you do, sure. But it should be part of your thinking.
Yeah, I agree completely. And why not have every option available to you? As you said, it doesn't have to take over. You're not going to go on autopilot and say, okay, this is what the book says, or this is what my analytics favor in this situation, I'm going to do it. But hey, at least you have that information available to you. At least you have that background, or you know, maybe even you have a guy, you know, who's whispering suggestions into your ear in certain critical situations. You know, I mean, I'm sure it is extremely difficult for a head coach who has to have, you know, concern himself with everything on the field, everything off the field. You know, in the moment, he's not allowed to wait 24 hours and then second guess his own calls. I'm sure it's very difficult to make some of these calls. That's why. Why not, you know, as you said, Darren, have somebody who's you know, that's primarily his role. Those kind of situations, again, not to tell Mike Vrabel what to do, but to, you know, to offer suggestions, to offer options in those situations.
In my opinion, you need that mathematics person. You need somebody that really understands the numbers. But then, even more importantly, you need somebody as the transition person who knows football, is respected by football people, the coaches, et cetera, that have no background in analytics, and you need them to be able to translate and put it in terms that they understand, and it's coming from a person that they're not going to sit there and go, that guy's never played football. What does he know about fourth and one? I've been in fourth and one. You know what I mean? That right. Discussion has to – there has to be that buffer between the two.
Yeah, I agree, and I do think there's that role in it. And Mike Vrabel, I think, was asked another point earlier this year, you know, which people in the organization were involved in analytics, and he sort of, it was a bit of a vague answer. He sort of said, oh, you know, we've got some assistant coaches who do this, or maybe some scouts who do this. But, you know, I think it's high time that there was one or two people directly involved in that. You know, that's their complete responsibility. That's what they do. Each and every week, and that's what they're responsible for on game day. And again, I'll stress it again, does that mean they have to follow what these people say? Of course not. You know, Mike Vrabel is a guy who played in the NFL and knows more about the game of football than all of us combined by a long shot. But have your options available to you. Why shoot down things without even taking a look at them?
John, I know you got to go to Mike Vrabel's press conference, but real quick, the Titans did try out a couple of quarterbacks yesterday. Was that just due diligence, or what do you make of that?
I'm curious about that myself. You know, certainly, well, there was the rumor that made the rounds on the internet yesterday that at first Marcus Mariota might be headed to the IR. And I know Paul Koharski did a good job of kind of quashing that rumor later in the afternoon. You know, I want to say due diligence because, you know, I'd be a little stunned, frankly, at the fact that Marcus Mariota, after sitting for 2 weeks, after practicing every day we've seen him, after playing six games, would go to IR as a result of, you know, supposedly an injury that was sustained in preseason. That sounds a little far-fetched. So, you know, they do look at all positions from time to time, so I want to believe it's just due diligence, but I'm going to try to follow up on that today myself.
John, appreciate the visit as always. We know you got to run in there and attend that, so we will talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, that is John Glennon from The Athletic covering the Titans. Of course, they're in Charlotte to take on the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk to Big Jeff, Jeffrey Simmons, in about 30 minutes. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon. Our weekly chat with him. Thursday night, tomorrow night, the Thursday night game will be out in Glendale, Arizona. State Farm Stadium. It's no longer University of Phoenix. 49ers and Cardinals.
Yeah, you seem very excited about that.
That'll be a dud. Then you've got the Texans and Jags. This is one that, you know, will not be.
That's important.
This will be a big deal. So remember that at 8:30 Sunday morning, 8:30 kickoff. As I think that game will be on NFL Network, I believe. Texans and Jags, 8:30 over in London. That is a big one. The Jags are 4-4. The Titans are 4-4. The Texans are 5-3. And that'll be interesting to see how life without J.J. Watt looks for the Texans. And isn't I'm drawing blanks. The left tackle, isn't he hurt too? Yeah, they traded for
Laramie Tunsil.
Isn't he hurt?
I think he was.
Yeah. So
I don't know the latest.
I don't know if he's available or what, but it's going to be interesting. And then you have the Colts in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. That is
To play versus the Jags
in London. All right. The Titans in Charlotte to take on the Panthers. Panthers are 4-3. Titans are 4-4. Of course, that's a noon kickoff at Bank of America Stadium. So what are we expecting in this game? I mean, it's no secret. I mean, they have to find a way. And I don't even know if it's possible, although it is, because as we talked about a lot last week, the Tampa Bay Bucs defense did do it. They did slow Christian McCaffrey down twice this year. But I'll tell you what, nobody else has. So you know you're going to have your hands full with McCaffrey.
Boy. Yeah. And if it's not running, it's receiving. I mean, that's the thing about it.
It's just as dangerous.
Yeah. He can get you both ways.
Yeah, if he's not running it well, then they just throw it to him.
Yep.
He's going to get the ball. That's they make you stop him. It all starts there. There's no question about it. And then you have to try to make life tough on Kyle Allen. But that's what McCaffrey does so well. He just makes it easier for you. And their offensive line is pretty good, right? Their offense, though, despite McCaffrey's production, is not the most efficient. Their most efficient unit is their defense, particularly pass defense, according to Football Outsiders. I haven't watched them play that much. It's weird because I just gave you Kyler Murray's numbers against them earlier in the season. He went 30 for 43, but only had 173 yards passing. Now, that's not overly efficient. He had two interceptions, too. So I'm curious to see. But their run defense hasn't been as efficient. It doesn't show in a lot of the rushing stats. But I wonder if this is a day that Derrick Henry can get on track, because his numbers have gone way down in terms of efficiency. The tackles for losses.
See what he did last
like
week,
that,
though, against a really good rush defense?
I thought that was encouraging.
I mean, I know
he ran the ball well.
I know he had negative plays. I mean, that's
you're going
happen.
To against the Bucs. You're going to in general, right? They showed the chart on the telecast that the running backs that are amongst the league leaders in tackles for loss or being tackled for a loss, some of the best of all time, Barry Sanders and those guys. So,
but that's his game. That's Derrick Henry's game.
It's going to happen.
It's what Nick Saban told you guys at SEC Media Days. You have to keep feeding him the football, and he has to get into a rhythm. And he did that against, you know, one of the best rush defenses in the league. My hope is now he, you know, goes against a rush defense that isn't very good, and he's able to continue that production, because I think that's what he needs. He needs consistency. He needs to be able to put it together in back-to-back games, and that's going to help with the offensive efficiency overall led by Ryan Tannehill.
He broke the long one, which was nice. Looking at his numbers, I feel like he's run the ball fairly well, like better than it was at this point last year, right, where he was maneuvering out of the game plan in a lot of the weeks at this stage of the season. I feel like the stage is set for him to do his best work in the second half, because the weather starts getting tougher. I think defenses start getting a little bit worn down. This is hopefully when he can start going to work. But that being said, with his production this year, he is minus 10.6% below average. Like, if zero is average, he is 10% below, or 10, almost 11% below average, which ranks him 28th. Among the running backs in Football Outsiders. Now, my eye test tells me he's been a little bit better than that. I don't think he's been bad. I think he has gotten tough yards when needed, but he hasn't broken enough big ones to offset some of the runs for losses.
Right.
It's not all on him. I feel like there's something better there.
The big one he broke last week, they got called back. I mean, that was...
That was tough. And he was about to get an even bigger gainer when he fumbled on the one.
Yep. And he was, you know, I told you guys in his post-game press or his scrum, he just didn't have much to say because he was beating himself up about that fumble. Mike Vrabel says Ryan Succop will practice today. The team will decide later in the week if he will kick Sunday versus the Panthers. Also, Josh Kalu, that's been on IR, he's practicing as well, Vrabel announced. So those could be two candidates to come off IR, designated to return. Thank you for your excitement.
Thank you, Chase.
Hey, I'm just reporting the news, okay? It's what I do.
McCaffrey is well on his way to a career year rushing. He already has a career year in rushing touchdowns already. This game will be their midpoint of the season, and he already has 8 touchdowns rushing. Last year was his career record was 7, and he rushed for just over 1,000 yards. He's got 735 yards rushing already with 9 games to go. So, unless barring an injury, he's going to shatter his rushing yards. He's already beaten his rushing touchdowns. Now, obviously, the strength of him has been obviously more of the receptions. He had 80 receptions his rookie year. 107 receptions last year. Wow. When's the last time the Titans have had a 100-plus reception guy?
It was the Oilers, wasn't it?
Yeah, that would be Hayward Jeffries.
Did D-Mace ever come close to 100 with the Titans?
Yeah. Yes, he was very close. He was in the 90s. They've been close.
When Heimerdinger got there, it
didn't Kendall Wright one year get really, really close?
He might
close?
Have had 100.
Did he get 100?
I think maybe he's like right there. 94 or something, maybe.
So D-Mace had 95 in 2003, 96 in 2004.
He was very close.
Kendall Wright was close.
I want to say 98.
Kendall Wright, the last
1,000-yard
receiver? I think he had
90 catches for 110 yards.
You're going 90?
he did not have a lot of yards for the amount of catches he made. His yards per catch was not that good.
2013, he had 94. That was the year he went over 1,000 yards.
Yeah. So
he was targeted 139 times.
McCaffrey has 39 receptions to this point. So he's still got some work to do, 343 yards receiving. And 2 touchdowns. So, but he's once again on pace to do what he does every year, and he's going to shatter all the rushing stuff. So, if he continues to do what he's been doing, it looks like Christian McCaffrey, if he's upright and playing for the entire season, is going to have like a 2,000 yard all purpose season
and be the MVP. Probably.
Great
probably.
Test.
Probably.
I mean, he's definitely in contention right now. I mean, he's going to be the one that they have to watch out for. I am curious, Willie, you brought this up. About Kyle Allen, because this secondary has been playing some good football right now. Adoree Jackson, we don't know what the status is going to be there, but you know they're a ball hawking secondary right now, and that you know with a young quarterback like Kyle Allen, that's something you have to expose.
Kyle Allen's numbers, if you're curious, from
he is
the
your favorite
football outsider. Yes, I know all about him now. He ranks 22nd among their quarterbacks, 10% below average. And in the QBR stat that ESPN put together, they list the rankings on that as well. Kyle Allen ranks 23rd in that stat. So Mariota, just in case you were wondering where he was, he's 32nd and 27th in the two things. And Tannehill still hasn't qualified to get into it, but he in his limited time, he is 11.6% above average, so a clear upgrade. And I think our eye test would back that up, without a doubt.
For sure.
Question is Delanie Walker going to be available?
Here's another question. What's the hurry?
Yeah, that's what I was
about
to say.
You're getting the production from Jonnu Smith and Anthony Firkser. And you have Mykole Pruitt. It's kind of the three-headed monster. They all sort of do their thing. It worked for them. Last year, they had to deal with
that hold on the Derrick Henry run and got it called back.
But in general, I think he's a good blocker.
He is. Look, John.
Would I rather have Delanie Walker? Yes, but if it's 100%, like I think they've come to the conclusion that if let's get him right, you know, let's have Delanie Walker as Delanie Walker, right. And in the meantime, him at 50 or 60%, I don't know what he was, but clearly he's got.
Well, they weren't using.
It's an issue.
I mean, there was something going on because they weren't using him. They just there was no production.
He's not the
first
he
game
is not the
there
same.
Was, but he had the 2 touchdowns against Cleveland, but then that was it. And Jonnu Smith has picked up where he left off, you know, once he got going last year and became a big part of this offense. Now he's doing it again. I mean, I'm with you. if this team is in contention later on in the season and you get Delanie Walker at 100% and you have Jonnu Smith, that's the two-headed monster that you need, especially with Tannehill being able to spread it around.
I wonder what will happen in the coming weeks with Delanie Walker, but I think the approach of trying to get him as close to 100% as you can, get him to a level that he hasn't been in several weeks physically, is the right approach, even if you got to go through the bye week.
Right. I'm with you on that. Don't rush him because you don't have to.
Yeah, you're not desperate. The other guys, he had to go through the whole year with these guys last year, and they had some production, yeah. And this year it's been even better.
And Ferkser, you know, you brought Ferkser up. I mean, he's been
solid, and Jonnu Smith have looked very good the last couple weeks.
Tickets are now available to purchase. NashvilleSC.com. You can hear the action beginning at 6:45 p.m. on Saturday evening on the official radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club, 94.9 Game 2. If you would like to be in attendance on Saturday night at First Tennessee Park, USL Championship Eastern Conference Semifinals, as Nashville SC takes on Indy 11, caller 6-615-737-1025, 737-1025, caller 6, and you're headed to First Tennessee Park. You've got a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC and Indy 11. We'll come back more.
Remember that thing that happened earlier with Pierre LeBrun when I got the text that you were going to break? Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Simmons will join us next.
Okay. I like how this is all working out. Jeffrey Simmons on the other side. ESPN 102.5, the game. Congratulations, Tim, in Nashville. Tim's going to be over First Tennessee Park on Saturday. See Nashville SC. Tim was lucky caller 6. A lot of you wanted to go. Don't worry.
Did you say Tim?
Tim. Not Hasselbeck.
No? No. Did we check on that?
Yeah, I think they get the last name.
Okay.
Jason
okay.
said no.
I thought Tim
well, he
might,
didn't really say that, but I
thought Tim might be trying to sneak.
Yeah, he's saying no.
A couple of soccer tickets.
Yeah. I mean, all he has to do is
remember,
ask his best friend.
I know, but remember what he did for the Titans preseason game.
He paid.
He paid good money.
I know. He paid.
He paid good money. He
to
knows
see
people.
The Patriots.
He knows people. He
I
should
know.
Not have had to pay that.
I know, but he wiped. You know, he just.
Well, just on the street,
if
too.
You've
you could
noticed,
have worked,
though,
the, worked the system.
I've been driving behind Hasselbeck, and he just throws $100 bills out the window. He doesn't care. Money's no object to him.
I need to drive behind him then.
Yeah. Money just doesn't matter to him.
I wouldn't mind a couple of hundos,
you know,
out the window.
Hal Gill put Roman Josi on the spot last night and said, man, you signed $74 million. Because I said to Hal, and I told Roman this last night, I said, Hal, would you change? Like, Roman's a class act. It's not going to affect him. I mean, Roman's going to be Roman. He's going to be the same guy. And it's not like he hasn't made money already to this point in his career, right? And he's just added $74 million.
Yeah.
I said, Hal, what would happen if you signed a $74 million deal? You know what his answer was?
I can only imagine.
I know.
Get a lot of beer?
Why do we always say that about Hal? I can only imagine what he would say.
His wheels start turning. Yeah. So what did he say?
He said, try me. I said, I have a feeling that would be a dangerous thing for you to have signed a $74 million deal when you were a player.
That's good.
He goes, try me. But Hal asked Roman, like, okay, what do you – like, do you have something special you want to buy? You know, is there something that you've always wanted that now you can – I mean, you know, I don't want to say money is no object, but, I mean, it's really not. I mean, he can do whatever he wants within region, you know, within reason. Or within a region. You can't buy a region. You can't buy a country, I don't think.
You can go to regions.
I think it was asked. Somebody wanted to buy Greenland not too long ago.
Really?
Let's not go there.
Okay.
Yeah, let's
so,
we'll go there.
Let's pull the ripcord, as Darren would say.
Roman said he really didn't,
he
have,
didn't
anything.
Have anything.
No, he said, and then he gave the answer they got, of course, a huge round of applause in Barrel House. Was he said, yeah, I'll probably do something nice for my parents. You know, that had everybody going, cool. What would you guys do?
With $74 million? Yeah,
Chase, I got to be honest. I'm kind of like Hal. I'm scared to ask. But he's like, okay, don't say what you want to say.
Well,
make sure this comes off the right way.
Well, let's bring it back to Tim Hasselbeck. Remember, he's had some funny stories about some of his teammates that did some funky stuff with
no
all that money.
No question.
he said something like $500,000. It was something like, I think it was Clinton Portis that bought like a huge fish tank.
An aquarium, yes.
Yeah, just a massive aquarium. Yes.
I would invest. I mean, I would definitely find some investment.
Stop it. Nobody cares about that. I would invest.
Have you ever seen Brewster's Millions? Where he has to do all that stuff?
What the hell would you do with the money? Like purchases? That's something nobody cares about. Nobody cares about investments.
Well, let's assume, Chase, that you would make practical decisions.
Like,
okay?
Chase is trying to show that
I wouldn't just go and blow it on anything.
This, you know, a car that you've always dreamed of?
I would buy a
house that you've always dreamed of?
I would buy a house because that's what I want to do.
How big would you go? Like, would you be obnoxious?
I thought about this because...
Okay, I'm going to give you the standard.
Okay.
You tell me if you're going over or under.
The standard house?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Mookie Betts is building a 20,000 square foot home in Franklin. Over, under?
Under. I don't need that.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad. Thank you.
I don't need that.
If you would have said over, I would have been really disappointed.
I would build a house big enough for me, obviously, but it's just me. Sawyer would need a yard, and I'd let him have his house out in the yard. And then I'd want a few bedrooms that people could come stay, you know, whatever. But I wouldn't want to have to keep up with it. Now, I know with $74 million, I could pay somebody to do that, and I would probably do that because those of you that know me...
No, it's not probably. You would.
I'm not the cleanest person in the world, so I would probably hire somebody to help with that. But then, yeah, I'd go buy a fast car that I don't need because I love cars. So really?
Do you have one in mind?
I'd get a Corvette.
Really?
Soup it up, just top of the line. I've always wanted a Corvette.
Okay.
So I'd do that.
You realize your size, right? Have you ever sat in a Corvette?
I have. It's tight.
I'm not sure that's the most comfortable car for you.
No, but I would.
Practical? Like you're... big guy, and those are...
Well, I can't buy a race car. I could.
You could do...
I could do that.
Chase, you can do a lot of... You could be surprised what you could do with that.
That's
contract.
What I'd do. I would buy a stock car.
Buy the Super Speedway.
And do something with it?
Do something with it.
I'd buy a stock car. I'd call Dale Jr. and be like, hey, you want to do one off? Go drive the Daytona 500? Let's do it. Let's go. Go win that, baby.
I would be nervous about you keeping your money around for a long time. A little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, a little bit. Because I think you would go crazy at first.
Yeah. My friends and I have this joke that we were talking like, what would you do if you won the lottery? Like, it was at, like $350 million or something like that. And I was like, well, I would take everybody on a trip. Like, I would, the first thing I'd do is I'd get a plane and I would take all my friends on a trip. And my friend Amber was like, cool, where are you taking us? And I wanted to be funny, and I just pulled the first city out of thin air, and I said, Ottawa. They're like, Ottawa? I'm like, yeah, Canada, Ottawa. And so the running gag has been, if I ever get rich, I have to take everyone to Ottawa. So there you go. We'll go to Ottawa.
That sounds like fun.
Go to a Senators game. Be a good time. Ask Kyle Turris, you know, the hot spots.
Our buddy Robbie Stanley.
Honestly, it's a pretty nice city. I just never get to see it because the arena's so far from the city.
I'm with our buddy Robbie Stanley, NHL.com. He said, I'd put a lazy river in my house. I'm with you. I would do the same thing.
Jared just asked me, do I know what a hedge fund is?
Don't answer that. Don't answer that. I just was curious. Now, Willie, I have no idea. He probably... I don't even know.
I think I would go for property, like over the cars. Like I'm not a sports car. I'm not into that. Get a good car.
I would buy some investment property.
I would go second. I would get like a second home. I know my wife. She wants to
live East Nashville.
No, I'm not saying that. We would have like a property up in for a summer house or something in New England.
Oh, in the vineyard.
I don't know about in the vineyard.
Oh, it'd be the vineyard.
I'd have to make a lot of money for that one.
You see Roman's contract?
Is that enough?
Is that enough? I would hope so.
Have you seen the prices on some of those houses? There,
well, you know, you can get one of the smaller ones.
Yeah, you'd be pretty small.
I mean, you're not going to be there much.
Yeah,
I guess
a couple summer months maybe.
Rent it out when you're not there?
Probably.
So there you go.
I never think about
it. You make money off that stuff.
Yeah. Just be able to fly to places where you want to go. That's what I would be thinking about, you know?
Private is good.
Private planes?
Yeah, that's that's always a good
air
option.
Chaser. But see, this face is, on the side of it.
This is why the 30 for 30 came out on broke, because guys
that's
like us have
said,
blown
I
all of our money.
I worry a little bit about Chase.
That's why. See, you got mad at me. No, you made fun of me because I said, I'm going to invest. You're like, well, that's boring. You know, what are you going to do with
well,
it?
Look, I would be the first to be like,
some of those guys do, and they invest in really bad stuff.
Chaser, that's why I'm not going to buy a car wash.
Can I borrow Air Chase? I'd be the first one. But
that's what Lenny Dykstra did. Lenny Dykstra went down with the car wash.
He did.
Yeah.
Car washes.
Yeah, he had a lot of them.
He had a lot.
I think real estate is probably the way to go these days.
I'm just saying, I was looking out for you. I'd want to borrow the stuff, but I was looking out for you.
Yeah, well, now you want to be nice. Okay.
Okay, I'll be nice. Can I borrow the plane?
Sure.
All right, we'll come back. Big Jeff, Jeffrey Simmons, on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget about our NFL pregame show, or should I say shows. 4.5 hours of coverage starting Sunday morning at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9:30 a.m. Are you going to be a part of that or no?
Nope. Ryan's got it this week.
All right. Ryan Porth and?
Calvin Smith.
7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the show that's shifting.
Actually, Max thinks he's doing it. So there you go.
Okay. What's not in the copy? That's what I was asking. George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue, where our coverage will be from 9:30 until 11:30. That will be Nick Kale, Floyd Reese, and Forever Titan, Chris Sanders, taking you all the way up until kickoff in Charlotte. Carolina Panthers and Titans NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. I thought G Pander nailed it. G Pander 78 says, DMAC, what are you talking about? Chase would put the money in a Preds gift bag, stick it under his desk, and forget about it for the next 2 years.
It's very true.
That was good.
That was good. Well done.
Caleb, or at Loyal Legion 615, says, I would buy stock in the Predators and keep a pedal tavern on the ice forever. Wow. All right, let's head over to the facility. Jeffrey Simmons is on the line with us. Big Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing fantastic on this rainy Wednesday. So you've got two games under your belt. You're 2-0 in your NFL career. Things aren't bad, are they?
Not so bad. Got a lot of work to do. You know, we just got to keep building, keep working, and try to keep this winning thing going. You know, it feels great to win, especially as a team. So we just got to keep it going.
Jeffrey, we had Wesley Woodyard on last week, and I asked about, you know, basically all of us having to admit when we first heard that, you know, they weren't even, you know, that they were, it was going to be sooner rather than later with you. I think we all kind of went, really? And then to see you get out there in that spot, and everybody's like, okay, what can you really expect in this spot? It's going to take time. Kind of Rashawn Evans went through this last year. And for you to have the impact that you did, I mean, it blew us away. So the question is that what you expected? I mean, how did you feel going into this spot, and what were your expectations for yourself?
I mean, I was just the whole time, you know, that when I finally got on the practice field, you know, I felt good, you know, I went to Coach Ray and them that weekend, just like, you know, I feel good, I'm healthy, so I'm just ready to go. And, you know, once I got out there, you know, as my mindset is, you know, when I'm on the field, you know, I'm not thinking about my knee, you know, I'm thinking about just playing football. You know, my position, you know, you have to, you know, whoop the man up, that line up across from you. So, you know, that was my mindset, you know, the whole time, not thinking about, you know, trying to do too much, just playing football. And, you know, that just what I did. You know, I just felt like, you know, I was doing my job and just going from there. So,
I'm sure you've been a part of goal line stands before, but that may not have been bigger than that one 2 weeks ago against the Chargers in your first NFL game. It was a game changer. It saved the game for you guys. How big was that goal line stand for you and your teammates?
It was big, you know, especially the way that game was going. You know, it was a close game. You know, it was a great team that we were playing against, and, you know, we knew that, you know, they was going to keep trying to run the ball at us. So, you know, us being a great defense that, you know, we have a great defense here, you know, just not, you know, bagging down. I said we're going to defend every inch of grass, and, you know, that's what we did. And, You know, we came up with a great stop. You know, D-line did their job. Linebacker did their job. Secondary did their job. So, I mean, everybody played a big part in that.
This is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you. And I remember when the Titans drafted you, and we had Joe Moorhead on the show. We had Bob Shoup on the show. We had guys who covered Mississippi State. I mean, we talked to a lot of people that have been around you. And I got to be honest, the message was consistent. It was the same with everybody. Everybody just praised the type of player you are, the type of person that you are, what you bring to the table. So I guess the question I have for you, since, like I said, we haven't talked to you before, is where did that come from?
I mean, it started with Dan, you know. I know for sure, you know, I come from a great background. My mom, you know, single parent that raised, you know, five kids on her own. And it just, you know, her standards for us, you know, it just, you know, I try to live up to that. And, you know, myself, you know, I just, you know, I take pride in, you know, my character. I take pride in how I conduct myself, you know. So from that point on, you know, I just, you know, you always have someone looking at you, you know, don't know who it is, but, you know, you just got to always conduct yourself, you know, as someone, looking at someone watching you. So that's just my mindset, you know, every day, especially walking into this building, you know, here, you know, just conduct myself like I want to, you know, a future job here. So, man, that's just how I conduct myself, how I carry myself, like, you know, for the future, basically what I'm saying.
We're talking to Jeffrey Simmons, the rookie defensive lineman for the Tennessee Titans. And Jeffrey, two of the people you're talking to have been through the ACL reconstruction here, so we have a little bit of a feel for what you've gone through. But I want to ask you just the mindset you have to have, because you worked your way back. There were a lot of people saying at the beginning of the season, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to come back and help them. You clearly are doing that. So you must have really had the right mentality every day in that physical therapy. So tell me how you approach that.
Oh, that's just the way, you know, like I said, how I conduct myself, you know. My mom always taught us, you know, you have to work what you want. And what I wanted was to get back on the field, because that's what the thing that sucked the most was not being able to play football. So, you know, every time I wake up in the morning, you know, I woke up, like, you know, with a mindset that, you know, I have to, you know, it's one step closer to getting on the field and, you know, just be better than I was yesterday. And that was my mindset. And like I said, basically that whole process was mentally. And like I said, I was mentally strong through the whole thing.
You, earlier in the game, had a sack. It was the first time you really just jumped off the screen at us and, hey, here's Jeffrey Simmons. He's arrived. You must have had that great satisfaction of that first big play. I could tell also how excited your teammates were for you. What was that moment like?
It was just one of the moments that, you know, it's finally here. You know, I'm finally playing football again. And, you know, especially with my teammates' excitement, and, you know, it was just, you know, I felt even better, you know, seeing them, you know, so happy for me that I made that sack, you know, made a play. I said, props to Daquan, you know, we had a game on, you know, we ran a perfect game, and I looped around. And just the excitement from all the guys, you know, it just made me even, you know, feel better about myself, you know, being back on the field. And, you know, I just, you know, from that point on, you know, I just got to keep making them type of plays, you know, to help the defense win and help the team win them in the game.
Now there's that week in and week out preparation, physically, mentally, et cetera. I heard Mike Vrabel say this when they asked about you at the press conference on Monday after the win on Sunday. He said, the good news for me is that Jeffrey seems like he feels better after this game than he did after the first game. And I think he's a guy that's been through that. He knows that it's tough to jump in midstream. So how important is it going to be for you to maybe to stay as sharp as you can so you can sustain this throughout?
Like I said, I guess, you know, that's the reason why we play the game. It's the reason why we have practice every week. You know, you just got to keep getting better and take the coaching. You know, I'm big on that, you know, trying to learn more football as I get older. You know, as I play this game, you know, you have to actually learn from other people. You have to take the coaching. And, you know, that's what I'm, you know, expecting to do. That's what, you know, I'm sure the coaches expect me to do that, you know. You know, I feel like I have a lot more left, especially, you know, just coming and helping this team win. So I feel like I just got to, you know, keep getting better so I can help this team win more games.
Jeffrey Simmons is with us here on Darren Donick and Chase, and I've heard people, players on the defense, say this, that if you know the Dean Pease defense, it's a lot of fun for you. If you don't know the Dean Pease defense, It's not. It's a lot of work. How have you been able, with missing time, you know, training camp and then coming in just a couple weeks ago, been able to keep up with everything? And it seems like that you have grasped this defense that Dean Pease has put together.
That's the whole thing, you know, especially during this recovery process. You know, I was in every meeting, you know, I was going to every walkthrough, you know, watching, you know, paying attention from the far, you know. And, you know, I was always active in the meeting, you know, asking questions, you know, Coach Cheatham asking me questions. So, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, as that recovery process was going, you know, I'm sure they knew that I was getting close to time to actually practice. So that's when I started getting more and more engaged, you know. So that helped a lot, you know, being able to walk through, you know, and actually see in the meeting room what the coaches want, so.
How cool has it been for you to be able to lean on guys like a Jarrell Casey or Wesley Woodyard, other of the veteran members of this defense, and be able to pick some things out of their brains, of not only about this defense, but about playing in the NFL?
I mean, I feel like that's one of the, you know, pros about, you know, having guys like that, you know, Wesley and Jarrell, you know, some guys who actually played this game a long time, you know, just getting, you know, some stuff from them, especially Jarrell that plays my position. You know, he always, you know, telling me this and that. So it's like, you know, having him in the same D-line room as me, you know, playing all these years is very helpful. And then you just have a great leader like Wesley who, you know, don't always try to get everything out of you. So, I mean, I feel like it's one of them things that it's an honor to have them type of guys around you and on the same team as you.
Jeffrey, I'm just going to put the bug in your ear as we wrap this up. I'm not trying to make your plans for you, but your bye week, your off week, Mississippi State's got a home game against Alabama, so you might want to look into that. I'm just saying.
I'll probably be there, you know, expecting, you know, them to try to actually win the game, you know, not the back down. You know, that's something that we take pride in, not to back down for no one. So, especially, you know, Mississippi State always been an underdog, so I mean, just one of the things, we just got to go with that mentality, you know, not begging down for no one. So
I like it. Hey, good to talk to you for the first time. Good job. Go to Charlotte, get a win, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yes, sir. Tighten up.
All right. That is Jeffrey Simmons. Big Jeff. Man, it's hard to believe the impact he's already made in 2 weeks.
You can tell how much the coaching staff and the players like him.
Everything you hear, just you hear it right there. I mean,
they like him. They see that he's – it looks like he's got a little something special.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. You know, you heard Albert Haynesworth last week talking about him and just, you know, having a glowing endorsement. And then I brought up to Dan Mullen at SEC Media Days, I asked him about Jeffrey Simmons, and he lit up. I mean, he was talking about the Florida Gators, and, like, I asked him about a former player at Mississippi State, and, I mean, he lit up and gave a 2.5-3 minute answer. So I think everything that we've heard is definitely true.
By the way, the Chiefs-Titans game, November 10th, CBS has confirmed that will be called by Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. And I'm assuming
the big dogs.
They think Patrick Mahomes will be back in the mix. Yeah.
That's the second time this year the Titans will have Nantz and Romo.
Well, they did the Cleveland game, right?
Yep.
All right. But they'll be here.
Yeah.
All right, we will come back. Good stuff from Jeffrey Simmons. Come back, kick off the third hour with Tim Hasselbeck. We do that next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.